This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong. As the world is thinking a lot more about health, consumers now have the option to potentially replace some of their favorite unhealthy foods and beverages with healthier, less guilt-inducing options. When it comes to the world of soft drinks, one alternative in particular is taking the world by storm: kombucha. I have Jillian Chen and Zach Faramond, co-founders of Mybucha, to tell us more about what kombucha is and how they've grown from drink-making hobbyists to full-fledged entrepreneurs.
Cool. So hi, my name is Zach. Both of us, me and Jillian, both started the brand about five years ago, right? And back then, she started it just because she wanted to try something new, wanted to wean herself off sugary soft drinks. And then she found kombucha and then she let me taste it. And I thought, wow, this is really cool stuff. It was new, it was fun. And then, you know, she loves tinkering in the kitchen. So she started sharing with friends. I mean, it's a very typical kombucha origin story,
right?
You know, you brew it for yourselves, then your friends go, can I try some? And then we share it with them and they go, oh, this is really good. And then we share it with friends, family, and more people ask for it. And then eventually she decided, you know, why don't I brew a big batch, right? Take it to some farmer's market and then see if, you know, we can get some traction there. And so that's how we started doing this, you know. And we started at farmer's markets. We would just bring little cups and say, hey, you want to try some kombucha? And, you know, this is what it tastes like. This is what it is. And some people were very confused. Like, what is this cloudy drink? What's that floating little mushroom thing on the top? But at the same time, there were a lot of older folks, you know.
Right.
And we also, a couple of European folks, were, oh, my granddad used to do this.
Oh.
Or my grandmom had something exactly like this. Is this kombucha? Ah, yes, yes, yes. You know, they're familiar with it because it's not a new fad.
Right.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, just to clarify for our listeners, in case they don't know what is kombucha in the first place?
Kombucha is a fermented tea that we use black tea, pu'er tea and green tea to ferment. That alone actually creates probiotics in the drinks and a lot of good vitamins, enzyme and good acid as well.
Right. So it's like carbonated as well because of the fermentation process.
Yes. Correct.
Okay. Mm. Really interesting. So, you know, I love that idea. And as you said, it's a very typical sort of origin story for a lot of, especially food and beverage entrepreneurs, where you have that home cook moment and then it's like everyone is curious about it and then you share it and eventually it snowballs, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that point when you went from this is a hobby to this is a business, right? Tell me about raising initial capital to get this started officially, right? How much did it take? And I'm assuming you guys bootstrapped the process.
Initially, we didn't take a lot of money because we start from home. What happened is me and Zach, when we see a potential, we started buying our equipment from overseas and start doing a bigger batch. That alone, not a lot, probably around 10,000-20,000 plus or minus around there, because we have to buy all those equipments. And we started to bottle using machines.
Mm.
Mm. And then when we started hire part-timers to come in to help us to do the bottlings. Yeah.
So apart from the bottling process, what other specialized equipment is needed to create kombucha?
Oh, okay. I mean, kegging, it came after more afterwards. But initially, we started with the glass jar. We brew with a glass jar. And then after that, we upgraded to stainless steel pot.
Right,
which
right.
is 50 liters to 100 liters.
Yeah. I see. Because also from my understanding as well, if you don't have the right material to ferment your product in, it might explode. I've heard that's a risk of when you ferment things because of all the buildup of the gas and everything. So you guys needed very specific containers to bulk make the kombucha, I assume. So you have created a multitude of flavors now since you guys have started about 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. How long was that initial research and development process as well?
Initially, how we started is based on my own liking.
Right.
Yeah. And then the research and developments usually took less than a month.
Mm-hmm.
2 to 3 weeks. Sometimes can be quite fast once we decided which flavor we want to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. Mm. And so you guys are co-founders. Tell me a little bit about how you delegate to your duties and responsibilities in running the business.
I am more into productions. And Zach is more on the marketing, the sales side right now. Yep.
Nice, nice. So at the moment, your products are priced at R12.90 for smaller bottles and R29.90 for large 1 liter bottles as well. Talk to me about that as well. What justifies those price points and how do they compare to your competitors as well?
Right. In terms of price point, it was pretty much, I think we just asked ourselves what we would pay for a bottle of kombucha, the kind of effort that goes into it. Although Gillian makes it sound like it was a very easy process in R&D, yes, it was, but also a lot of testing. You know, we got to mix different things. She had to, you know, different spices, different flavors. Is one particular mango type of fruit better than another type of mango? Do we blend these mangoes? And so there's a lot of different things going on, but it's on a miniature scale, right? So now that we find that we're actually, you know, we're getting bigger, more and more people, you know, I mean, it's getting more popular kombucha. So now we're having to scale up. So we're also tweaking as we go along and things like that.
Yeah.
In terms of price, sorry, the question is about pricing. So we looked at what we would pay. And then we also looked at what all the other brands were also doing. And we kind of fit somewhere in the middle. And we thought, okay, $12.90 sounds like a comfortable price point for us. And that's basically how we came up with it. Yeah.
What you're comfortable with as a consumer yourself.
Yes, right? Correct.
And the source of fruits that we are using right now as well. Because we don't directly use frozen fruits. Especially our grapefruits, grapes, and what is that? Passion fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we really source out. We tried a few suppliers, but at the end, like, we managed to find a really good suppliers from Janda Baik Bentong site. So we have to source directly from them.
Actually, that was going to be one of my questions as well, which is talking about the fact that you use fresh fruits in your products. And it's great that you use local suppliers for some of them. But do you use local suppliers for all of your raw ingredients or just...
Not all.
Right.
Some of it. Those that we can, we will try to source locally. Those that like grapes, which we can't actually source it here, then we will try, we will use other, from other countries.
Got it, got it. And did the availability of ingredients affect the flavors that you've ended up going with in the end?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially our mangoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite hard to, we were jumping from mangoes to mangoes, different type of varieties of mangoes, until we finally found the mango that's suitable for us.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of sort of trial and error approach to that as well. And are you profitable right now?
Yes, we are. We are, yeah. In a small scale, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's always a good thing, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And, you know, especially after 3 years, that's a pretty, I would say, fast-paced track towards being profitable as well in comparison to some other businesses. So you guys also have these flavors and some of them are quite unique, I would say. You've got bentong ginger and lemon. You've got passion fruit and turmeric, for example. You've got spirulina mint as well, which I've never heard of. So, you know, that was all just trial and error, right? That was just you guys seeing what happened. Did you have any previous experience with like F&B or anything like that in creating flavor profiles, anything?
No.
No. Purely no. Just what you thought would work.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
It's just like, the try and error, especially the mint and spirulina, that was actually a very, very good combo.
Exciting.
The end, yeah. But when people hear spirulina, what happened is they were like, put a step back. We're like,
yeah.
Oh my God, you know, I'm not going to taste that.
But that's the thing,
We really have to tell our customers that you should try this, give it a try. Every time when they tried it, they love the profile flavor of that combo.
Yeah, spirulina specifically is a very health-associated product, right? From what I understand, it's that kind of green a product, and it's sort of is derived from seaweed or something like that. What's the origin of spirulina?
Some kind of algae or sea kelp, something of that sort. So it looks icky, it smells icky, right? So
but it tastes great.
But when you blend it with the, you know, the sweet sour kombucha profile, and then you put in a bit of mint leaves, it comes out very refreshing. So you don't feel it at all.
And so, we have like one customer that really like our spirulina mint, and he only orders this flavor.
Great. So there is an element of customer education in a sense. Like, first of all, in regards to what kombucha is and, you know, what the potential maybe benefits might be. But also, some of these flavors are a little bit, I would guess, out of people's regular flavor profile domain, right? So that's a little bit of, hey, look, I know what this looks like, but yeah. I swear it tastes good. And I assume as well that because this is sort of a soft drink alternative, tell me about the shelf life of an average bottle of kombucha for you guys.
This one, you can keep in the fridge up to 4 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If it's once open, we would recommend that you finish it within a month, within a week.
And it's recommended to be fridged as well, refrigerated.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also understand you guys mentioned that you do have a bottling machine, but the machine is still essentially hand operated. So technically every bottle is still bottled by hand, right?
Yes, yes.
So, you know, I think especially because now you're moving to the retail space, that process needs to be standardized. So I'm assuming the machine helps with that. But, you know, tell me how else that process is standardized for you guys.
In terms of the you know, filling up the bottles, mm-hmm. Because when it was done by hand, what is that? The level of the kombucha is not level for each bottle.
Right, it's uneven.
Yeah, it's uneven. Mm-hmm. So once we use machine, everything is standardized.
I see.
Yeah, other after that, we will have our staff to cap it, to seal it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Those are still very much handcrafted, actually.
Right. Yeah. And also, of course, as an F&B player, you do have to adhere to certain safety and health regulations. Tell me a little bit about that and how you're navigating that. Especially when you started from a home cook situation.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say 50% of the work is washing and scouring and keeping things
sterile.
As sterile and spotless as we possibly can, right? So like the jars that we use every time we're done with a batch, we take it out, we scour it, we put in a certain kind of chemical to just rid it of any bacteria, any, I know, microbes that might come from the drink and all that. So a lot of that is 50% is just cleaning and constantly making sure the environment itself is as spotless as we can make it. We, in terms of bottling as well, yeah, I know, like you say, you know, demand is growing. And so, you know, we are looking at new ways of improving the processes. I think, it's fair to say we don't have all the answers.
Yeah.
All right. But we do it step by step, day by day. And then we discuss amongst ourselves, mm-hmm. amongst our team members and say, what's the best way to do this? Do we need a bigger machine? Is there a it's not always to go high tech. Sometimes low tech is the easiest way to do it. Do you need specific spouts? Do you need specific spigots, they call it, that you plug into the jars, and, you know, is it easy to turn? What brand do we use? So what kind of, what level, what standard of stainless steel and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of ways to do it. And so, you know, we do it day by day. We experiment with it.
Still improving.
Yeah.
Did you have to apply for any sort of a food handling certification as well as a business?
So we do the food handling certification process. It's a very basic process, how to handle fruit, how to handle all this raw materials, you know, just very basic commonsensical stuff. But we're also moving into a bigger production area. So we're getting all the proper certifications. We're getting the consultants to come in. We are hoping to get halal certified, you know, with not just with halal, with the MSTI cert and all those kinds of things, so that people feel confident when they, yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Well, it's time to take a short break. But after that, I will continue speaking to Jillian and Zach, co-founders of MyBucha, all about their kombucha business and where they're going next. So do stay tuned to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Bring forth moolah. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9. Today I have Jillian Chen and Zach Faramon, co-founders of MyBucha. They are a kombucha company. And before the break, they talked a little bit about the origins of MyBucha, as well as the R&D process and the reason behind some of the flavors that they've created, including ones like bentong ginger and lemon, as well as spirulina mint. We discussed before the break that you use fresh fruit and premium teas in your products. Now, as we all know, there is a massive issue with two things. One is the supply chain globally, and two is the cost of food prices, inflation in general. It's a massive problem. Talk to me about that, how you guys are feeling, especially as people who need to procure fresh fruit and other products that might be disrupted by this process.
A large percentage of our, I think only grapes, blueberries, what other flavors are not local?
Pink grapefruit.
Pink grapefruit, right? Yeah. So these three fruits have to be imported.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, the increase, we feel the increase, you know, like things like, but we try and source locally, like, you know, she said, like the ginger that we have, we source it from farmers up in Bentong because it's the spicier variety, it's the more, you know, livelier type. The passion fruit, we get it from specific local farms that have, you know, that's fragrance that we're looking for. So it is an increase, the price of bottles, the price of teas.
There's an increased price in our bottles.
Right.
Actually, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so we actually try to maintain the cost of our selling price.
Mm. At the moment, you guys can cushion that. You guys can absorb that for yourselves at the moment. But obviously, if this is to continue, you know, that's going to be a question to be answered in the future, right?
I guess for small producers like us, it's just a matter of sourcing, right? Do we source from China? Do we source from other places? Who's got the best price? Whose quality, you know, meets the expectations? So it's a constant struggle to look for, things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, on our level, because it's, you know, we're tiny.
And you mentioned as well that you use glass bottles. I mean, why glass bottles in the first place instead of something potentially cheaper?
Because during the fermentations, if you use, because even if you bottle right now, already finished products, right? The fermentation is just still ongoing if it's in the room temperature. So if we were to use plastic, it will start leaching on the plastic. Yeah, unless we manage to find, you know, something that is safe.
Fermentation-grade plastic, if that exists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If we manage to find. Other than that, we might be going into canning. Yeah, that would be our next stage of R&D.
I see. And also, you guys do deliver the kombucha as well. So talk to me about that, the logistics of delivering glass bottles. What's the process of packaging and all that as well?
A very low-fi technique, right? We pack the bottles in boxes. We put little pieces of paper, cardboard in between.
Mm-hmm.
We bubble wrap. If it's out of state, we bubble wrap each bottle individually.
Mm-hmm.
If it's locally, we'll just put in boxes and make sure they don't, you know, knock against each other. If it's for people who order over Grab and all that, we will just package it in these cloth, hand-sewn cloth bags that we use sometimes. So right now, we can still manage on that part. But yeah, I know what you mean. But eventually, we'll see. We'll see how it happens. But of course, bottles right now as well, that shape, that cylindrical shape, the strength of the bottle, the fact that it won't affect the juice and everything inside. So that's why we still use them.
And also, I mean, there's also the question of sustainability in terms of being environmentally friendly as well.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, as we know, packaging takes up so much of that time and that space, especially plastic with bubble wrap and stuff like that. Would you guys consider, if you found an alternative to that, would you consider eco-friendly packaging, all that stuff for your products as well?
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah. Because right now, what we do is, because my parents actually has this curtain shops.
Mm.
So what we are doing is we try to use as many cloth bags as we can from my mom's side. So yeah,
you know, so you're reusing like the scraps and
So, but a lot of our customers actually like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's reusable.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. There's just so much material that's left, even from, you know, fashion, anything that's fabric based. There's so much left over. So we actually
just patchwork it together and reuse it,
correct,
right?
Correct.
Even for us to take back our bottles to recycle, that actually costs more than buying using a new bottle than a new bottle.
So unfortunately, the sort of eco-friendly potential there, it's still not quite sustainable not very justified in terms of the cost at the moment, but it's something you're moving towards hopefully in the future.
Yeah, because what we do also for our partners, like cafes, restaurants, retail partners and all that, they order in bulk. So we tell them every 12 bottles you return to us for recycling, because we'll steam it, we'll scour it, we'll clean it. Every 12 bottles, we'll give them back a fresh bottle. So we encourage them to save the empty bottles, tell the customers, don't dump it, don't break it, don't throw it away, give it back to us, we'll use it again. Yes, the cost is higher, but we can still kind of manage, you know, we can still, so.
Brilliant. Yeah. And speaking of your partnering outlets, you have developed partnerships with quite a few outlets as well. You've got Runjit, you've got the Hive Bulk Food Outlet, BizBox, Sisu Pantry, Tengkek Burung Cafe as well. This list is quite extensive. How have these partnerships helped your business?
They have been very supportive from the very beginning, but not easy as well.
Right.
Especially if we were to go into Kura supermarket, we had to contact them numerous times in order to get attention from them, in order for us to get into. And then the most recent one, we actually went into Food Merchant from Pavilion. Yeah, that is not easy as well. But they have, once we managed to get in, they have been a very supportive partner.
I wouldn't say it's tough to get into these supermarkets, but a lot of follow-ups need to be done.
I mean, it's building like any kind of professional relationship.
Exactly.
You do have to sort of jump that initial barrier, right?
Yes.
That is obviously going to be a problem,
yes,
or an obstacle. But once you get past that, you know, hopefully, yep, the process is, yep, a lot smoother from,
yep,
there on in.
Correct.
And as I've mentioned earlier, the outlets that you started out with are fellow SMEs, right? They're not necessarily the bigger players. So it's only, mm-hmm, now you're starting to expand into having your wares available in grocery stores. And that's sort of the next step, right, of building that network and building those connections. Interesting, interesting. And would you ever be interested in opening physical outlets of your own My Bucha outlet, potentially?
It's in the works.
Okay.
We're thinking about it. We're discussing it with different, you know, partners and getting some advice on if it's a feasible, mm-hmm, business direction, opening a kiosk or opening some kind of
little juice bar.
Correct, like a juice bar that sells fermented foods, mm-hmm, fermented drinks, just very health based. And I guess for us is to really be clear that, you know, what's our objective,
right,
of opening this, right? You know, we want to make sure that the reason we started Bucha was that, you know, healthy foods can be delicious.
Mm.
They can be really good for you. They can be fun for you as well,
mm-hmm,
you know? So that was the whole reason why. And I think if we were to go into kiosks, that's we really want to carry that theme.
Right.
Right? That spirit that, you know, it's fun, it's healthy. It's not just something you do for your body. It's for your enjoyment as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys have really big dreams. You know, in order to support this, tell me a little bit about your staff as well. Have you increased your staff? I know you mentioned earlier that you started out with sort of part-timers, but talk to me a little bit about that. Have you increased your team?
Yeah, I think for us, both of us are still very much hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
We have only 2 full-time staff right now, and then we have part-timers that come in during the bottling process when work is slightly more heavier.
Mm.
So there's only about maybe on hand 4 of us right now that are doing it full-time. The rest come in as and when we need help. And then we do have a lot of freelancers because, you know, the freelance economy is
yep,
huge. Getting designers, getting writers, getting, you know, different things. So it's been helpful in that sense, you know, but we definitely need to bring more people on board to, you know, because her background is in real estate, right? My background is in more like sales or, you know, sometimes like creative writing and things, stuff like that. So we can only take it so far.
Right.
We need other people who've built brands, who've done different things to come in, share their expertise and stuff like that. So that's what we're kind of looking at.
So would you be looking potentially for some sort of external mentor or something like that to help benefit the business as well?
We do have a mentor right now, which is actually our investor, as is in the picture. His name is Damien. He has been a very, very helpful mentor. So if anything that, because right now we're actually looking for a place to move,
mm-hmm,
to a bigger production space. So that he came into the pictures and gave a lot of advice in terms of that.
And you've mentioned that he's your investor as well. So you guys have secured external funding.
Yeah, we did.
We're just home brewers.
Right.
You know, we feel so connected to the brand sometimes that we do things that just out of the how we feel at that particular moment, things
so
like that.
So you guys are sort of a right brain operating and you needed a left,
yes,
brain person,
exactly,
to come in.
Okay. Exactly.
Brilliant, brilliant. And are you still developing new flavors? Are you thinking about expanding your product line even past just kombucha?
Oh, yes. We're actually looking at kefir, anything that related to fermented,
mm-hmm,
food. Yeah. Those could be yogurt. Yeah, those that we're definitely looking into. More expansions.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. So I guess my final question is, what is in the future, the near future, for My Bucha for you guys?
Wow. Okay, so in the future, I think we want to tell people that kombucha is not a fad. It's not something that, you know, that's come along and, you know, people are buying it because it feels cool. It's something that's always been with us. You know, humanity has always consumed fermented foods. We've always had it because, you know, our gut system, the stomach, the intestines, all that, 70%, 80% of the immune system is housed in our stomach. So whatever we put in, the stomach absorbs, sends the nutrients to wherever the body needs it. So taking care of the gut is extremely important. Mm. We want to tell people that it's not expensive. It's not difficult. You know, things like, you know, we have kimchi, we have, you know, we have different fermented foods like yogurts, we got tempoyak, we got, what else do we have? You know, we have, you know, chinchalo is a kind of sauce that's fermented and things like that. So we have always been having fermented foods, you know, so let's focus on those things again, you know, focus on good health, focus on taking care of ourselves. Yeah.
And having fun.
Yeah, and having fun, exactly.
Yeah, and have fun. Brilliant. I mean, there's one thing that I want to add on that. This is a personal experience of me that I've been having like fever, cough, you know, this is quite normal, right? But for the past 4 years that I've been consuming kombucha, I have not had any cough.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. A little personal anecdote to round off today's conversation. But thank you to Jillian and Zach for joining me today and talking to me all about my kombucha.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong. I've been speaking to Jillian Chen and Zach Faramon, co-founders of Mybucha, a kombucha business. If you've missed any of today's conversation, you can go ahead and download our app that's available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. You can also find the podcast on our website, bfm.my, to listen to and download as well. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.